The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
So I'm delighted that we're joined today for the Culture Club by the leader of Sinn Féin, Mary Lou MacDonald. Mary Lou, thank you very much for taking the time to join us to talk about music and books and television and all the culture that you enjoy. We always start with a bit of music. So tell us why you've picked John Lennon's Shaved Fish as your favourite album.
Well, Matt, I'm delighted now to be with you to discuss all things cultural. I chose Shaved Fish. I mean, it's the compilation album, which for purists means that it shouldn't be your favourite album ever. But I'm somebody who enjoys a little bit of everything. I've always loved John Lennon for the music, but also for the outlook, I suppose, and the politics behind it. And Shaved Fish is a great compilation. I have it in vinyl, as it happens. John Lennon and the Plastic Ono Band. It's one of a collection of vinyls that I still have, and I'm kind of proud of it, and I enjoy it. It's got, you know, a real mix of him at his best, I think, post-Beatles, and a really, really unique sound, him and Yoko.
Did you always keep your vinyl safely, even when vinyl sort of went out of fashion as people moved through cassettes into CDs and then started streaming?
I have a section of it. I can't say that I kept all of them. I kept a number of my albums. I used to have singles, and I was trying to think which was the first single that I ever bought, but I just can't remember. It's that far back. But I managed to keep some of them, certainly not all of them, and I kept them through thick and thin, even before, you know, vinyl became fashionable again. Funny enough, I've no cassettes. I don't know, now that you ask, I don't know where they all went to. At one stage, no more than anyone else, I had stacks of them of all sorts, but they weren't quite so lucky as the vinyls.
We've had quite a few people nominating the Beatles as their favourite act, but you've gone for John Lennon on a solo basis. Did you not get into the Beatles, or did you just prefer what Lennon did without McCartney?
No, I like the Beatles. I mean, my other half is a huge Beatles fan, and my kids are big Beatles fans as well. So it's on a lot in the house, but it's a great sound. I mean, they were a phenomenon, a global phenomenon. Their music will last forever. It'll be played long after you and I, Matt, are well off the airwaves. But there's something in John Lennon for me as a solo artist that I just connected much more with, particularly as a teenager. And I suppose his story as well, and the fact that he died so dramatically. And I remember him being shot. I remember Lennon dying at a kind of a time where I was beginning to come of age. So I think that might have contributed to it as well. So maybe it's an accident of timing as much as anything else. But I love what John Lennon stands for, kind of the integrity of his position as regards peacemaking and humanity and connection. I have always felt that and felt it as a very authentic stance, and he was a really real person, and I like and respect. Actually, I love that about him.
Let's hear a little bit from the Shaved Fish compilation album, perhaps Lennon's most famous individual track, Imagine.
No hell below us.
Ireland's Imagine. You've given us quite a long list of favourite bands and artists, Mary Lou. Take us through them, please.
Yes, I have, actually. I was just looking at it, and believe it or not, Matt, I could have added to it. I mean, you've John Lennon, obviously. I love Bob Dylan. Love Phil Lynott, but then what self-respecting dub doesn't? Love Nina Simone, Dusty Springfield, loved ABBA, still do to this day. And I could have added a whole lot more. So in other words, I mean, I love The Cure. I loved everything from Status Quo to, you know, Bananarama. So again, I'm not one of these people.
You're a real 70s and 80s girl, Mary Lou, aren't you?
I am. I'm afraid I think it's very strongly generational, my choices there.
Do you listen to modern day music? Do you not have the kids insisting in the car that you listen to the modern 21st century stuff?
Yeah, I do. And I mean, I like that too. I've a very open mind, and I'm unfortunately, I don't get to nearly as many gigs as I would like, just given my life and the level of busyness and being a parent, I suppose, and I'll put the kibosh on a lot of that. But yeah, of course I do. But I would still, to be honest with you, if I'm listening to music and I'm out walking or going about things, I would still lapse to that list that I've given you and more, but kind of generally from 70s, the 80s into the 90s. Yeah, and then I'm open to more modern stuff, but it wouldn't be my go-to.
Well, let's hear a little bit of Dusty Springfield's The Look of Love.
Yeah.
The look of love is in your eyes. The look your heart can't disguise. The look says so much more than just words can ever say. And what my heart has heard, well, it takes my breath away. I can hardly wait to hold you, feel my arms around you. How long I have waited just to love you. Now that I have found you, you've got the look of love. It's on your face, a look, the time.
Oh, that's a beautiful track, The Look of Love, Dusty Springfield. But that's a 60s track. That's even from before you were born, Mary Lou.
It is. And believe it or not, Matt, it's... both of my kids who are now teenagers can sing all of Dusty Springfield. So that's kind of, I think that's almost the musical equivalent of like a family heirloom. But what a voice. I mean, that is just, it's balm to the soul, isn't it?
She's it is gorgeous.
Just so unique. And I mean, there will never, ever be another Dusty Springfield.
Now, you mentioned gigs that you hadn't been able to get to them even before they all shut down on us. I think there are so many of our listeners are missing the opportunity of going to live gigs. You've gone back to the mid-1980s for a favourite gig that you can remember. Tell us why you've picked Bruce Springsteen at the RDS.
Okay, I suppose it's because it was the first really big gig that I was at, and it was The Boss, and it was in the RDS, and I think I'm reckoning it was 1985. I was about 15, 16. So it's in and around there. And it was just incredible. I mean, he is incredible, as all of us know who's ever been to any of his concerts. But the place was packed. I was there with a group of my friends. And I remember the crowd was such that we were like carried out on a surge. Like our feet didn't hit the ground on the exit from the RDS, but it was just amazing. And I suppose it's because it was the first really, really big, big gig that I had been at, and it was amazing. I really felt that, you know, the world had opened up, and this is what being a teenager coming into adulthood was all about. And Bruce Springsteen to this day is a powerhouse. He's incredible, and I suppose in many ways nobody gigs quite like him.
Yeah, have you seen him in recent years? Because I saw him in the RDS almost been 4 or 5 years ago, and in Croke Park as well. He's quite extraordinary, given that he's a man now in his 70s. The amount of energy that he still has,
yeah,
and the show that he puts on for about 3 hours.
Yeah, and in fact, I saw him when he was back that time as well, not in Croke Park, but I think I saw him again in the RDS, myself and my husband on that occasion. And again, like he certainly has never lost it. And what it's not just his ability to perform for that length of time. His voice is in great nick. He always has the best of a band with him. That's never changed. But maybe more importantly, that connection that he can make with the crowd and with the audience, that's always mixed. I mean, you're going to get at any Springsteen concert, you're going to get people of all ages, very young kids, and then their mammies, and probably at this stage their grannies as well. And he makes it work for everyone. He's just an amazing artist.
We don't have him from the RDS in the mid 80s, but we do have him from Los Angeles in the mid 1980s singing Born in the USA.
Fantastic.
Born in the USA. Favourite gig from Mary Lou MacDonald, the leader of Sinn Féin, who's our guest today on the Culture Club. And you've given us some very interesting movie choices as well, Mary Lou. And I want to start with one, I suppose, that may be familiar to many people sitting watching the television on a Sunday afternoon. Calamity Jane, the musical with Doris Day from the 1950s. Yeah. Why does this one stick out for you?
Well, I love her. I think she's just brilliant. She's a brilliant entertainer. She's got amazing comic timing. And I suppose everything with Doris Day goes back to when I was a very young child, you know, and I remember seeing Calamity Jane for the first time and just being absolutely fascinated with it. It's jaunty. It's not, you know, hugely taxing on you. It's the best kind of, I suppose, relaxation bubblegum, I suppose. So, and I've always liked it. If there's a Doris Day film on, particularly if it's Calamity Jane, I will watch it and I will enjoy it greatly.
Okay, also interested to see that Woody Allen would be your favourite movie maker. You have anything by Woody Allen. Now, some people would say there's sort of mixed backlog of Woody Allen stuff. What sort of stuff do you like by him?
Well, like I say, I like anything by him, even though I know that it's a mixed bag, you know, quality-wise. But I suppose with Woody Allen, what I like about him is his sense of humour and his perspective on life as much as his movies. I like that kind of, I suppose, very Jewish humor and perspective on things. And certainly when I was a teenager and a young adult and just, you know, looking around and experiencing things and movies, he always struck me just as you know, somebody who was interesting even when he was, his work wasn't great. You know, A Rainy Day in New York. I'm just looking, I've listed the ones I've seen here. Manhattan. I mean, I've seen pretty much all of them. And I've, again, I mean, he's clearly not anything like Doris Day, but in a very different sense.
That is
true. If it's
true.
Woody Allen, I'm in. Like, I'll enjoy it and I'll watch it and appreciate it.
Well, as it happens, you mentioned the whole thing about his Judaism. We have a scene from Hannah and Her Sisters in
which
his character Mickey explains to his parents that he wants to convert from Judaism to Catholicism.
What? Oh, my God!
I don't understand. I thought you would be happy.
How could we be happy?
But because I never thought of God in my life, now I'm giving it serious thought.
But Catholicism? Why not your own people?
Because I got off to a wrong foot with my own thing, you know, but I need a dramatic change in my life.
You're going to believe in Jesus Christ.
I know, it sounds funny, but I'm going to try.
But why? We raised you as a Jew.
So just because I was born that way, you know, I'm old enough to make a mature decision.
But why Jesus Christ? Why, for instance, shouldn't you become a Buddhist?
That's totally alien to me. Look, you're getting on in years, right? Aren't you afraid of dying?
Why should I be afraid?
Because you won't exist.
So?
That thought doesn't terrify you?
Who thinks about such nonsense? Now I'm alive. When I'm dead, I'll be dead.
I don't understand. Aren't you frightened?
Of what? I'll be unconscious.
Yeah, I know, but never to exist again?
How do you know?
But it certainly doesn't look promising.
Who knows what'll be? I'll either be unconscious or I won't. If not, I'll deal with it then. I'm not going to worry now about what's going to be when I'm unconscious.
Mom, come out.
There's a God, you idiot. You don't believe in God?
But there's a God, then why is there so much evil in the world? Well, just on a simplistic level, why were there Nazis?
Tell him, Max.
How the hell do I know why there were Nazis? I don't know how the can opener works.
Woody Allen, who's 85 now. Mary Lou, of course, he has also been the subject of much controversy in recent decades. And Mia Farrow has made various allegations, which has led many people to sort of cancel him and not view his work because of it. What do you make of that?
Well, yeah. And I mean, you know, certainly with the Me Too movement in more recent times, I mean, Woody's controversies and difficulties predate that. Certainly, I think information comes into the public domain that would make you either very uncomfortable or make you really reassess individuals as people. And certainly that controversy around Woody Allen and his marriage and who he married and the circumstances was just, I thought, very unnerving and unsettling. But I think the work, his work, stands still on its own two feet. And I mean, in the Me Too scenario, I think word came out on lots of different people that caused, you know, great difficulties. But at the same time, you have to, I'm just not convinced by this cancel culture. I think that's just too absolutist. I think it's too cut and dried. I mean, another kind of person, he's not a movie maker, but a guy by the name of Al Franken. He's a writer, he's a comedian. And I mean, I read everything that he had written. There were never kind of great, you know, works of literary greatness, but he has that similar kind of New York Jewish wit and just that very acerbic kind of commentary on modern society and politics and so on. And I absolutely love reading his work. He's amazing. And I would laugh at just the pithiness and the aptness of his observations. But, you know, some really, you know, alarming things have been said and allegations made about him in this kind of Me Too moment as well, which gave me pause for, obviously, concern. But you have to ask yourself, well, does that mean that the value of the writing or the making of the movies, you know, do you cancel all of that? If somebody is guilty of a criminal offence, whoever they are, it doesn't matter whoever they are, they have to be held to account for that. Kevin Spacey, another actor I like a lot, but is very much in that category. I mean, what emerged about him was deeply shocking and unacceptable. But he was a great actor. So,
and you can still enjoy watching the work that he did.
It's
that old saying about separating the actor from the act. And actually, I just want to ask you about one other movie that you had on your list, A Beautiful Mind. This was from the early part of the century, Russell Crowe, Oscar-winning movie. What about that in particular sticks out for you?
I still remember the first time I saw that movie. And as you know, it's about the great mathematician John Nash. And it's a story that's about brilliance, but it's also a story that is about mental illness. It's a story that's about family relationships and strain and stress. It's a story that's about recovery and survival. But it is fascinating. And Russell Crowe is absolutely incredible in it. And I remember the first time seeing this movie being so shocked and moved by it. And I watched it again actually over Christmas time. And it still remained an incredible movie. It's about society at a point in time, but it's also about the internal life. And it's about a very, very brilliant, very, very brilliant, very eminent Nobel laureate. But it reflects, you know, on the brilliance of the mind, and that can sit side by side with great human fragility. I mean, it's epic. And to anyone who hasn't seen that movie, if I was to recommend a movie to anyone, I would say see A Beautiful Mind. I just watch Russell Crowe, and he's incredible, absolutely outstanding.
I actually agree with you entirely. In fact, it's on a list I have with my own teenagers that we're going to watch during this lockdown. But it's interesting that one of the books you've also picked is by somebody who did suffer with mental illness as well, and that's The Bell Jar, Sylvia Plath. Why did you pick that?
Yeah, I would always struggle when somebody says, what's your favourite? You know, what's your favourite book? I mean, I don't have a favourite book, but The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath is, on one level, a very difficult read, because it is about the internal life of Esther Greenwood, and it's a troubling story about a troubled person. But it's also very, very fascinating because, again, it's about the internal life of a woman. It closely mirrors, it should be said, the personal experience of Sylvia Plath, who, as you know, is a very, very brilliant writer. The Bell Jar is her only novel. The rest of her work is poetry. But she died herself, I think, at the age of 30. She died by suicide. She really struggled herself during her life. And The Bell Jar, in a fictional way, I think grapples very directly with many of the dilemmas that she felt. Now, it deals with heavy enough themes, but it's an easy enough read. And I just want to emphasize, it's not a book that is a downer at all. It's a very, very insightful book, and I loved it. Actually, I got it at Christmas time, but that's why it was in my mind again. I got a copy of it at Christmas time for my own daughter. She's in her teens now, just to read. And I had mentioned to you as well, Matt, The Catcher in the Rye,
which is another rites of passage for teenagers, isn't it?
Yeah. And maybe it's because maybe these are to the forefront of my mind now because I'm the mother now of teenagers. But likewise, that book also is, I mean, it's about a journey, but it's also very much about the internal life of Holden Caulfield. It's about the struggles with emotions, with societal pressure. It's also about kind of escapism and how all of us as human beings, and particularly so, I suppose, as teenagers and coming into adulthood, how you kind of create your own realities, or how you have the capacity to do that too. And it was also a book that was banned, which I think makes it still kind of, I don't know, a bit.
Can I tell you a little story about that, actually, just briefly? When
sure.
My late mother moved from Belfast to marry my father in Cork in the mid-1960s, when she was travelling across the border by train with her boxes, the customs officers decided to investigate her books and confiscated her copy of Catcher in the Rye. And it was something that always stuck with her. She couldn't believe it, that moving from Belfast to Cork, that she would had come into the state where they would confiscate books from her.
Yeah, yeah, incredible. I mean, it's an amazing thing when you reflect on it now. But and now for a reader now in the year 2021, do you know, it's still a great book. It's a fantastic narrative, but it would hardly be termed as being kind of morally questionable or subversive. But those were the times that we're in it, Matt.
Okay, let's go to television. And most of your choices, again, I think are from your teenage years. The A-Team, Starsky and Hutch, Miami Vice, Dallas, and indeed Dynasty. Okay,
yeah.
Why Dallas and Dynasty? Why did you get into them for?
I know this makes me sound horribly superficial, so dear listeners, just bear in mind, you did ask me specifically about TV shows when I was young, when I was a kid. Look, Dallas and Dynasty, I mean, they were of their time. Jay Orr, Who Shot Him, Bobby, the good D2-Shoes brother, Sue Ellen, and everything that Jay Orr put her through. I mean, that was a thing at that time. I suppose Dynasty was a bit of a, in some respects, maybe a bit of a poor relation in television terms, but that's the time that was in it. For most of us, like, you are still in two-channel land. You know, it's not like we didn't have, you know, Netflix and Sky and, you know, international broadcasting. So, I watched them. I thought they were sort of interesting and funny, funny kind of narratives. In fact, at Halloween, it was not unheard of for some of us, I will not name names, within my family and in my friend group to actually dress up as some of these characters.
Well, I'm going to ask you which one it might have been after we've played a clip from Dynasty in which we have Joan Collins as Alexis and Linda Evans as Crystal.
Today's my wedding day. Cecil and I are going to be married in an hour and then I'm going to be living in his palazzo. Palazzo, that's Italian for mansion, in case you didn't know.
I've heard the word used.
Yes, in an Italian film, no doubt. You know, it's too bad, Crystal, that you never went there, because the social scene in Milan and Rome is quite brilliant. Just as it's going to be in Denver in the future when the Colbys entertain, as it used to be when I entertained in this very house.
Back in the old days.
Yes, the good old days. You know, it's too bad, Crystal, that despite your obvious craving for the Carrington money, you never really developed any sense of style about how to use it socially. Well, you're going to learn from an expert now. I'm going to teach this town how to party. I'm going to lead the pack. And who knows? I may even invite you and Blake if the whim strikes me.
Save your whims, Alexis. He won't be coming.
Well, it's getting late. My new limousine and chauffeur are waiting for me. It's off to my wedding. And I just know, Crystal, that despite our more than occasional differences, you wish me all the best. Don't you, dear?
So, Mary Lou MacDonald, if you dress up with the big shoulder pads and the power dresses, who do you identify with, Alexis or Crystal?
Indeed, and it really is that conflict, you know, good, you know, versus bad and taking the shape of women. It's actually, you know, very strong imagery. You know, you get those kind of stereotypes of that kind of iconology and, you know, everything from opera to kind of like highbrow theatre. So which would I be? I think I'd have to be the baddie. I think I'd have to be the brunette. The brunette in the shoulder pads. What do you think, Matt? I think that sits better with me, huh?
I'm not making any comment. I'll leave you make your own choice.
Very wise, very wise.
But there is one last thing, because unfortunately we're nearly out of time. But I do want to ask you about the favourite TV show from the present that you've nominated, because apparently, after an absence of nearly enough to a decade, the fourth series of Borgen started shooting this week. So tell us, how real was Borgen to you as you were watching it?
Well, look, I only got watching Borgen, believe it or not, in the course of lockdown. I should say I'm not. I don't watch a huge amount of television. Obviously, I watch the news and I watch things that are about current affairs and things related to politics. So anyway, I watch Borgen, and it's as good as people had told me, and it is very, very realistic. I mean, the acting is class. The storylines are highly credible. What's most credible about it is her as a woman, as a mother, as a wife, and just all of the dilemmas that present, you know, managing the politics, managing home, the children, the worry about them, the, you know, need to support them, and trying to juggle above all else is absolutely brilliant. And people had said to me for a long time, you have to watch this, you have to watch this. And I said, yeah. And it didn't get around to it, but I finally got around to it, and it is absolutely brilliant, and I can't wait to see more.
Indeed, it's a great choice, one that I would heartily recommend. Unfortunately, we didn't have time to get to your favourite plays, which are the likes of Jono and the Paycock and Waiting for Godot and The Mousetrap, which I had wanted to ask you about, or the podcasts where you nominate the likes of Owen Jones and Stephanie Preisner and Callan's Kicks. Does Oliver Callan not do you or something that you're recommending him?
He does, but look, come here, we listen to this every weekend and we laugh our heads off. Now, sometimes he gives us all a right going over, let's be fair, but... It amuses me greatly. I'm very bossy in his thing, which is absolutely not true. Ha ha. And Pierce and Owen are kind of the brainy acts that I kind of say, oh, shut up. I know it's very funny. And look, at the end of the day, things can be tough. Things are tough for everyone now, and everybody needs to have a bit of light and a bit of a laugh. And if it's at our expense, well, then that's even better.
We have to leave it there. Mary Lou MacDonald, leader of Sinn Féin, thank you very much for taking the time to join us on the Culture Club here on The Last Word of Today FM.
Thanks so much, Matt.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.